Welcome to Offline, a podcast about building a 100% online and remote expertise-driven business without the bullshit. Hosted remotely by me, Liston Witherell.
And me, Philip Morgan. You'll learn how we're building our businesses, what scares the shit out of us, and hear from our friends and experts who are building their remote businesses too. Welcome to Offline. Liston Witherell.
Philip Morgan, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And we just came off of our new, brand new and shiny podcast theme. So I'm stoked about that. And I'm stoked to hear about your experiment.
I have periodically over the years gotten emails from folks on my email list who are like into the idea of email marketing, but not sure how to get those first few subscribers. And there are people out there who purport to have an answer to this. I have not been one of those. I understand the question, of course, and it's a critical question. So you want to get into email marketing, you see that it's effective, you see that it's part of the toolkit that folks like us use in running our businesses, and naturally you're curious, how do I get started? So I've gotten that question, and I have seen some of the advice out there. It's so bad. I'm not going to name names here because that's mean. Is this really the same offline we're used to?
They're not making enemies in the industry anymore.
How can you not call out bad practices? To an extent, it's a matter of opinion, but I really do believe that stuff like ask all your friends and family to join your email list is, I suppose, well-intentioned. But my problem with that is that those are not going to be relevant subscribers. They will, to an extent, partially address the issue of I'm shouting into a void. I'm sending emails to a list that has like three people on it. And if you can get to 20 or 30 people, that's a meaningful difference. But still, if those 20 or 30 people are like doing you a favor by being there, it's not really going to have the dynamics that make an email list an effective marketing tool. So I don't like that approach. I've heard other approaches like go to networking events or Chamber of Commerce events and like manually invite people to your email list. Yep. That's maybe a little bit better, but still, I feel like it's going to sacrifice relevance. And in fact, that's my main beef with all these approaches is I think they trade relevance for size. And I'm not talking about massive size. I'm just talking about even to get to 50 subscribers, if you're just asking people who are essentially randos to be on your email list, then it's not going to be a list full of relevant people.
And on the other side of it, one piece of advice I hear all the time is just buy Facebook ads or just buy Instagram ads or just buy fill in the blank for the network that's a little bit cheaper today. So like today, maybe it's Quora or Reddit, right? Seem to be on sale and they're cheaper clicks there.
Yeah.
And my feeling about that, because typically people will say, oh, well, you put together a PDF and then you promise it and ask people to make a transaction, put in their email address, and then they get the thing and then you get permission to email them forever. My personal experience with this, even having been on the side of being the subscriber, is most people are subscribing for the free thing, not because they give a shit about hearing from you.
Right.
And so I also find that that advice is not so good. So what did you learn here?
Well, and I'll add on to that by saying, I think it's not super beginner friendly. Running ads is, I guess, neutral, kind of depends on your intent and lots of things. But from an effort and skill perspective, it's costly.
Well, and you have to have, if you're trying to build an email list of 100 people, mm-hmm. let's say you would have to be willing to spend at least $500 just to possibly accomplish your goal, probably more like $1,000.
Right. And a fair bit of that is going to be money that you spend just learning how to make an ad not suck.
After having several ads that do suck. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That's not a great approach either. It's not beginner friendly is my main problem with that. So there's another constraint here. My inclination would be when I get these questions from folks on my email list, my inclination would be to say, well, here's what I did and this worked great. But what I did was also not beginner friendly. So for me, guesting on podcasts was a really good way to start building my email list. But I have some advantages that not everybody has. I've spent more or less 10 years doing a form of public speaking, which was technical training. So I'm very comfortable in front of a microphone. Not everybody is. And I had just written a book, The Positioning Manual, and I had spent lots of hours putting together an email course that promoted that book. So I had experience and assets that I had built that made podcast guesting, for me, relatively easier than it would be for, I think, most beginners. And what I did, this is, I think, funny and also embarrassing, is I went around for quite a while telling people, oh, just guest on a podcast. It's just amazing, underused channel for reaching people. It builds trust incredibly quickly, all of which was true at the time. And the trust building is still true. It's not an underused channel anymore. But it's just not beginner friendly. It's super intimidating to people, to this idea of guesting on a podcast. So that turned out to not be great advice. That was an additional constraint on my ability to answer that question.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just going to share quickly, kind of hearing you talk makes me think, well, what did I do? Like, where did my subscribers right. come from? Because at the beginning of last year, my business pivoted significantly. Yeah. And so I had a list of around 2,000 email addresses from my digital marketing firm, GoodFunnel. Yeah. And then I emailed them all. First of all, I pruned the list. And then I emailed them all and was like, hey, I'm doing something new. If you don't click here or respond, I'm going to kick you off my list because I don't want to send you irrelevant shit. Yeah. And so I went from 2,000 to 300 at the beginning of the year. And now I'm back up to about 1,500 or 1,600 now. So I added over 1,000 subscribers this year. And the key drivers were free content and LinkedIn marketing, sort of go hand in hand. And then also, I did a couple webinars that yielded a few hundred subscribers also, like 200 to 300 in two webinars that I did. Also not beginner friendly, I would say. This is not the advice I would give to a brand new person, because it was kind of the culmination of doing this now for 3 years and practicing and certainly not being the best at it, but being a lot better than when I started. And so if you haven't done those things, you know, creating that amount of content and showing up that often on LinkedIn, I think also is a big barrier.
Yeah, that's advice I would have given 2-3 years ago. Oh, just do a webinar. It's easy. If you just get 5 or 10 people to show up, it's a success. And I guess I respect where I was coming from, but I think it was a bit naive because I just tended at that time to discount the emotional difficulty of a lot of this stuff. Guesting on a podcast or putting on a webinar, if you're doing it for the first time, it's mega intimidating. So all this led me to say, okay, my buddy Liston is like super good at using LinkedIn to attract people to an email list. Maybe I can run an experiment based on some of what I've seen him do to try some ideas out. And I'll do it in public, in full view of my email list. I mean, not full view in that I don't have like a webcam in my office running 24/7, but trust me, that would not be all that interesting. So I came up with this experiment I called 135. The idea was, can I get 100 new email list subscribers in 35 days?
35. I'm so puzzled. Why wasn't it like a nice even number, like 30?
I know. I gave myself 5 days to kind of get things going.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. You're right to ask that question.
I've been curious.
I'll give away a little bit of the punchline here. You know, I've reached a point where I'm sort of pivoting the experiment and I'm headed to Nashville this week for a business trip. So I'm kind of doing a reset on it. And so maybe it'll now be 130. Like I'll just kind of do a reset and give myself 30 days with the new configuration of this experiment to try to get 100 new subscribers. And I'm trying to do it in a way that I think is accessible to the beginner. That's the big idea of this experiment. Now, I can't be a beginner. I can't get rid of my reputation. It's not massive, but it's more than a beginner would have. And I can't get rid of a lot of things that I have that put me in an advantaged position over a beginner. But I can at least try to do this in a way that I think is more beginner friendly than some of the advice I used to give. So I started the experiment and it looked basically like this. I was going to try to connect on LinkedIn with an audience that is a little different than my current audience, and then publish content every day on LinkedIn with the hopes that that content would be so stimulating and so awesome that it would attract some of these people that I just connected with to join my email list. That's the experiment, which was based on some of the stuff I've seen you do, but also giving away the punchline here, you and I had a heart-to-heart a couple weeks ago. And
you were like, it wasn't a heart-to-heart.
You totally schooled me. You were like, okay. I showed you my approach and you were like, okay, let me show you what's wrong with this.
Yes.
And make some suggestions about how to do this differently in a way that's likely to work better.
That's right.
So let me describe, though, the false start, because that's really what I wanted to talk about on this episode, because there's some really interesting stuff there. Not so much in the particulars of how I did that, but where it led me. So here's my thought process at the time, Liston. I was like, okay, I need to try to reach out to an audience I haven't reached out to before. And right now, what I'm sort of doing is talking about how to make this transition from being a coder to being a consultant. What if I focus on this thing called the Gartner Hype Cycle, which I think is the main reason why, if you specialize in a platform, just purely specialize in a platform like Objective-C or iOS development or Ruby on Rails development or whatever the platform is, Salesforce, you're subject to this sort of up and down cycle that's outside of your control. And when the cycle goes through this sort of negative phase, it can be really hard on your business. And I've talked to lots of people who suffer this problem. And so I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to try to identify an audience of people who are probably just about to deal with the negative phase of this hype cycle. And I picked blockchain developers. So I constructed on LinkedIn, on LinkedIn Sales Navigator, I should be clear, a search that identified about 800 or so blockchain developers. I used some automation to connect with or invite all of them to connect with me. And then I started publishing or writing content and publishing it on LinkedIn that was about, the coming, blockchain apocalypse. It wasn't quite that overblown, but that was kind of the idea. And I realized what I was doing was sort of working from first principles here. I was saying, okay, who is about to face some trouble and how can I connect with them and tell them that this is coming and give them some ideas for a different way to approach things? Doesn't that seem great? Doesn't that seem like really a good, ideal thing to do?
It does.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it makes sense. But as soon as I was trying to write this content, every freaking time, Liston, it was like, ugh, God. It just felt so forced and artificial to make this argument, even though I really do believe that this is true. What I was having to do was kind of get up to speed on some of the particulars of blockchain and do some research that, frankly, I was not that motivated to do.
I'm wondering also, so there's a common piece of advice that I think is a terrible one that a lot of people give consultants and freelancers, which is find something wrong with your potential client right now and go tell them about it, right?
Right.
Here's what I found on your website, and here's why it's terribly wrong. And I always liken it to going to a cocktail party and you approach someone and the first thing you say is, man, that's an ugly jacket. How's it going tonight? Right? Like you wouldn't do that. That's not the way you would start the conversation.
Are you coming at that from more of like a social dynamics perspective of like, this is just not a way to start a relationship with criticizing somebody?
Well, right. No one wants to be told they suck, right? You kind of have to build up to that in a graceful way, let's say. And it's not about them either, right? It's also about, here's my experience and here's what I found and here's how it's helped some other people. Was that part of maybe your resistance to learning about this? Is you're sort of the guy showing up and saying, man, you're wearing an ugly jacket and it's only getting more out of fashion by the minute?
Yeah, I think that is part of it in that I felt like, yeah, like I was showing up at someone's house party and criticizing the music. Like, man, the music sucks here.
Right. Which you would only do silently in real life. You wouldn't tell anybody. You'd just think it.
Right. And the dynamic I've always had in my business is people in pain come to me. I mean, I guess it's sort of like some doctor who's a crusader against smoking going to the government building and waiting for all the smokers to come out and take their break outside and just like shaming them or something. Yeah. Just, it felt like a drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exaggerating a tiny bit for effect here. you got to remember, my larger motivation here was to serve my audience. That motivation was never felt wrong to me or never felt questionable. But how I went about that felt to me like I had cooked up this idea, and now I was doing stuff I didn't feel great about in service of this idea. I call this a false start because two things. It led to me a sort of an insight. At some point, it was like, I bet most people in the marketing profession who aren't trying to earn attention for their own thing, something that they have created, because that's another category of marketers, right, is people who've sort of made their own thing and they're now introducing it to a market or trying to tell the world about it, to use simplified language. I'm not talking about them. I think they probably have a different set of motivations. In fact, that's who I am. Like, that's how I operate as a marketer. But I think there are people who like have marketing jobs, hundreds of thousands of people like that. And what they're doing is they're selling something that somebody else created, and they may not give a rat's ass about that thing.
That's right.
Like, they have this marketing skills or this training or this marketing experience, and they have gotten a marketing job because that's the kind of job that they wanted or feel qualified for. And now they're in this situation where somebody else made the whole thing, and they're just trying to move some needles. And it gave me this tremendous sort of sense of empathy for what that must be like. I think it sucks to be in that situation. I'd never want to voluntarily be in that situation. But I wrote in an email not long ago, I think if you got some of those folks, gave them a few drinks, got them to kind of in a situation where they're speaking a little more frankly, their employer's not there, so there's no repercussions for them being honest. I think they would tell you they just don't care about the thing they're selling. And that is so sad to me. And I got a taste of that through this experiment.
I think there is an important distinction here, though. So, like, a good friend of mine works at LinkedIn, and he's on the marketing team. And in your example, he's sort of a tactical marketer, kind of a project manager type, right? Where he's looking at the data and the numbers and like, okay, how are we going to spend our next $1 million? Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of questions he's thinking. He doesn't have to be passionate about the marketing content. He has to be passionate about the game. Can I get $1.5 million out of this $1 million rather than $1.4 million? Like, that's got to be his motivation. For me, I liken it to when I go for a run. Can I run the same route 10 seconds faster this time? And that's kind of his motivation. He's not like, boy, how can I really wow people with this content? So as an individual, I'm having to both win at the game and create the content and therefore give a shit about the content, I think. And I think that's where it's a little bit different than what you're describing, in that you have to both care about it and do well at the execution of the game. And a lot of professional marketers are only looking at one very small piece of it.
That's a really good point. And that speaks to the fact that most of my work in marketing has either been the first job I had where it was creating content for Microsoft, and then just working for myself. And also working for clients, but never like working in a giant marketing department for a giant company. So yeah, that's the perspective I don't have personally. And I think you're absolutely right. It reminds me of something else that I've brought before my list before, which is this idea of the craftsman entrepreneur spectrum. I've gotten some pushback on that idea. The idea being, there's some folks who I think really just love doing the work, and they're more craftspeople, and they're not so much concerned about like, how am I going to make a great business out of this? Or how am I going to make a scalable business out of this? I work with quite a few people who I think kind of fit that description. The idea of making it a great business is almost an afterthought. And then someone said, well, aren't the entrepreneurs craftspeople, but their craft is building a business? And I said, yeah, I guess that's a valid way to look at it.
Right.
Anyway, it's a little bit of what I'm saying really is it's a bit of a false dichotomy. And I know that, but it's also a useful model for thinking about the world. Same thing here. I think it's a bit of a false dichotomy to say, well, probably most professional marketers don't care about what they sell. You've brought up a really great exception to that, which is, well, some of them are look at it as a sort of a competition or game, perhaps, where what they're excited about is moving the needle, and they don't have to have their heart in the creation of the content, let's say, because maybe somebody else does that or whatever.
And do you think that that's the key point or the key insight that you arrived at is that if you don't give a shit about the topic, it's really difficult to create compelling content?
That would be the most specific version of it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, blockchain is interesting at a high level, at like a, okay, this is a thing, a force within technology or an idea within the world of technology that could change things or could be a part of how the world is different 5-10 years from now than it is now. And that's interesting, but trying to dialogue specifically about the technology is just not where my heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my key insight is that, at least for me, if I want to show up in a way that is powerful and compelling, I have to care. And the thing that I care about right now is not blockchain. It's helping coders make this transition from coder to consultant.
And maybe I would argue you were just focused on the wrong thing. So it's okay if you don't care about blockchain, but surely you care about the coders working on blockchain who are going to get their asses handed to them if they don't see this transition coming.
I do. And that makes me wonder, well, why did I hit the wall so quickly on this particular approach to this particular experiment?
Mm-hmm.
And I said earlier that it, you know, had something to do with like caring about the particulars of blockchain. And yeah, maybe, but I don't know, maybe I have my standards for myself are too high. I felt like I was being a bit inauthentic compared to how I'm used to being in connecting with people. Meaning when I show up and I have a message for someone, I feel like I'm operating at a pretty high level of authenticity. Like I'm being myself. I'm saying something I believe in and something that I care about. I guess maybe that was what got my goat and got me dissatisfied about this other approach.
Well, so I have a lot to say about the benefits of actually caring about what you're doing.
I would like to hear what you have to say, my man.
Well, before I get to that, I'm wondering if you could update us on the status of this experiment.
The experiment's on pause for maybe a week or two. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. I told you about this and your eyebrows were like inching up as I was explaining my approach. And you were like, well, that's never going to work. Let me just save the listeners a lot of time and summarize your response. That's never going to work. Try this. I will leave the particulars of what I'm going to try either for my own updates on my list at philipmorganconsulting.com/list. Or maybe a future episode of this podcast, because I think it would be interesting to talk about if we want to talk tactics. But you were basically explaining a lot of nuanced, really useful insight into how LinkedIn works and how my approach was basically going to encourage LinkedIn's algorithm to ignore what I was doing or yep. limit its exposure to the audience I'm trying to put it in front of, which is always a game you're playing anytime there's an algorithm involved. I mean, email marketing is less subject to that, but it still is subject to ranking algorithms in terms of where Gmail, does it put it on the promotions tab or yada, yada. So anyway, we're always needing to be aware of that as folks trying to connect with our audience through some media that we don't control. So I'm going to reconfigure the experiment. I'm going to be in Nashville next week. Not a great time for me to reboot it. So I'm just going to put it on the shelf for a week and then come back to it with a fresh new approach. Same idea. Can I attract 100 new subscribers in 35 days? But a simplified approach that I think will work better based on what you told me.
Okay. And how many subscribers do you have now?
Well, that was the thing. I think I got zero. It yielded zero subscribers. Now I did the content push for, I think, 3 days. And then I hit the wall where I was like, this just doesn't feel right. I would never encourage like a client to give up an experiment that quickly. But also I feel like I have a bit more experience than some of my clients do. And it didn't feel like it was going the right direction. And then you and I had that conversation and that sealed the deal. That made me say, okay, I have to try a different approach here. And so I will, but that's the current status as of this recording.
So in terms of anybody listening to this, we're going to talk about why you really should care, why it's an advantage, let's say, to really care about what you're doing. But in terms of the experiment, the critical components are you have to have an offer to people. You have to have a way to get that offer in front of people, a traffic source, which is LinkedIn in this case, and you need a transactional mechanism. So a form plus your email list, and then you can be in touch with them. And those are kind of the critical components. Philip, tell me if you've had this phenomenon or felt this. You look for a new car and you are going out and you're test driving cars, and maybe it's this car, maybe it's that car, it's the BMW, it's the Toyota, it's the, for me, it's a minivan because I love minivans, which we've established on the show.
Yes.
And whatever you decide to get, I think you have like a BMW 3 Series or,
yeah,
I don't know exactly what you have. I'm not a car guy, but you have a BMW of some sort. So there's this, all this buildup, right?
Right.
And you're going out and you're looking at the car and you're fantasizing about the car, and then you finally get it. And then suddenly, everywhere on the road, all you see is BMWs. You're like, BMWs are everywhere. How did I not notice this before?
Where did all those BMWs come from?
Has that happened to you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Every single vehicle I've ever owned, except for the first one, which is a 1969 Jeepster Commando. But even then, I think if I ever saw one, I'd be like, holy shit, there's another one. Yeah, totally.
This is something called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. And essentially, we all experience it. And what it does, essentially, is it means we start to see things increasingly, even though they were there all along, they seem like more present. And here's how this relates to giving a shit. If you do care, so like, let's go back to your blockchain example.
Okay.
If you really were like, just constantly thinking, giving a shit means thinking about it, more attention, more interest, more drive to figure it out. Suddenly, when you're reading the news or you're watching TV or whatever it is that you do with your time, you're going to be linking all kinds of other ideas to blockchain and this blockchain problem that you're trying to comment about, right?
That is such a good point. And I've seen that for 100,000%.
Right. And so you write a daily email. And I noticed this when I was publishing every day. And I really do need to get back to that, because all of a sudden now I'm constantly on the lookout for ideas that are interesting to this audience. And I'm looking to tie what otherwise would be just kind of throwaway moments in my life. Not that I don't like my life, just that, like, you know, they'd be mundane. You wouldn't think about them again, but you go, oh, that's interesting. That thing that happened at the hardware store, I'm going to relate that back to specialization and email my list tomorrow.
And I have done that numerous times. And you're so right. Yeah, that's where that comes from, is caring plus being so invested in helping that you start to recruit all these everyday experiences as raw material for ways that you can help or teach or draw an analogy or what have you. Yeah, that's a great observation and 100% true.
Yeah. So for me, like, I've seen that happen before in my business, where if I really care about it, I'm always looking for ways to relate things back to the thing that I'm talking about. I think also that giving a shit means you actually want to show the fuck up every day when it's hard.
Yeah.
So what happened to you 3 days afterwards? You started the experiment. LinkedIn wasn't really working. You're like, no one's signing up. You talk to me. I give you a dose of medicine that sort of confirms, like, oh shit, there's like all this other stuff I need to do.
Yeah.
And then you stopped, right?
Yeah. The slightest gust of wind yes. halted my progress.
Right.
And for contrast, I have been writing an email that sometimes I pour my heart and soul into, not every day. But I really care about 5 days a week for 3 years. I just had my 3-year anniversary maybe 2 weeks ago, Liston, of emailing my list daily.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And now it's such a habit that I did not even think about the anniversary. But my point is, I've been doing that for 3 years. It's not like I can't produce content that a number of people find worth reading. I certainly can. But the difference was my heart wasn't quite there in the same way. So yeah, the smallest gust of wind was a reason to stop. Now, again, the experiment is not over. I didn't throw up my hands and say, oh, well, screw this. You know, this is too hard. I'll reconfigure and move forward. But at the same time, it was just so easy to stop that forward motion.
Here's another thing is, I think it's hard to fake passion and excitement. Some people are really great natural born liars. Yeah. I'm not one of them, It's like to a fault.
Yeah.
Like I know that my poker face sucks. Like I'm just making faces when I don't like someone, which people have said to me before, right?
But your wife loves that.
It's her favorite thing about me, that I'm extremely direct and don't hide how I'm feeling. And what's interesting is if you look at, there are lots of studies where people will lie, and by observing their eyes or their smile, most people will be able to tell whether it's genuine or not. Right. Now, of course, if you're doing the written word, marketing written content, people can't see that. But the point is, we have bullshit detectors. It's actually a very valuable evolutionary trait for us to be able to tell, are there bad actors in our presence, and essentially like banish them from our tribes.
Right, right.
So that's one thing, is people, it can be sensed. And for me, in addition to that, I just can't find the drive to do it. If I'm not really feeling it, this is one of my curses, I believe. It's like, it's a good and a bad thing. It's a strength and a weakness. But if I'm not really feeling it, like there's no way I'm going to sit down and do my best work. It's just literally impossible.
I'm thinking about that. I don't know if Derek Sivers originated it, but he wrote this blog post about later in your career, you should be like, hell yes or no. If an opportunity is not a hell yes, it should be a no. And it feels like you have that built into you based on what you're saying right now. You're sort of like a hell yes or no by default sort of person.
I think so. I haven't been the best about always honoring that. Like I've done things that were like, yeah, maybe. And then I've learned that those don't go well.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss interviewed Terry Crews, and the way he said it, Terry Crews said, you know, I've learned that if I'm late to something twice, I don't want to do it. And so I just stop.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's actually a good rule of thumb. So I think it's hard. So one thing we haven't talked about is if you're trying to build an email list or you're trying to do any marketing project, there are so many options out there. Everybody is clamoring for everyone else's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't feel awesome and magnetic and compelling, they're not going to pay attention. And so it seems like a losing proposition from the outset if you don't really care about what you're doing, because it's not going to attract the people that you want to attract. If you're not feeling it, why should they? Is just kind of the most obvious way to say it.
Yeah, it's just my friend and colleague, Jonathan Stark, and I've been talking about this a little bit here and there through text messaging, and it's just like, it might be the top one or two or three most important things in all of marketing, I think, for businesses like ours, to be clear. Procter & Gamble, they're playing a different game than you and I are playing. But I feel like for businesses like ours, I'm trying to think of someone I've met who's fabulously successful and doesn't like what they do or hates all of their clients or something like that. Like, whereas there's just like a deal breaker level of disconnect between their heart and their wallet.
I do know someone who did that and had an exit in their business.
Okay.
And continued to work for the acquiring company for a few years. But like, I'm sure it could not be sustained. And he wasn't the lead marketer either, right? He was just sort of behind the scenes running the operations. And his, maybe not passion, but certainly his interest was like, how can I build this machine that runs without me? And that was an important part of it to him. So,
yeah, I guess I just don't know that many mercenary business owners. And I think it's just the nature of who I am and what I do, the kind of clients I attract. I think you're right. There certainly are out there. Geez, I just can't imagine operating that way. But hopefully folks are not feeling like I'm trashing that way of operating. It's so foreign to me, the idea that you could do something you don't really care about that much, or you just care about the financial results, but everything else about it could be either neutral or distasteful to you.
Well, fuck it, Philip. Take a position here. My feeling is, if you're listening to this, you want to build a solo or very small business that operates online, right? Yep. And that means you're probably the one who's putting together your marketing and getting it out into the world, which I think you and I are in complete agreement necessitates that you care about what you're doing. I just interviewed a guy who had a big exit in his consulting business, over $20 million. And when I asked him what was kind of the cornerstone of your marketing, he sort of offhandedly said, well, you really got to care about what you're doing. And in addition to that, apply it in all these different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was doing old school stuff, like going up at conferences and talking and going to networking events. And so I think it just comes across anywhere you are. If you're the lead marketer, the lead content creator, the person putting this out into the world, if you're not passionate, it is going to be a slog and an uphill battle in most cases.
Yeah, that reminds me. I think we need to talk about the difference between what Stephen Pressfield calls the resistance and caring versus not caring, because that can confuse, I think, for folks who are new to feeling the resistance because they've just never been in a situation where that's a big factor. But in the work I do, it's like a daily factor. I feel it at least once a week. And it can sort of confuse you emotionally because you're feeling these feelings that are like, ugh, I don't like this. This feels uncomfortable. This feels, I don't know, I'm getting all these signals from my emotions that I should be not doing this or doing something different. And so I think we could spend some time talking about, add that to our list of topics listing.
Is that a separate podcast?
It is, because I got to go in a little bit.
So Philip is teasing you. Hit that subscribe button so you can hear that when we do cover it. In terms of the action to take around this, if you're working on marketing that you're not excited about or passionate about, or at least very interested in, at a minimum, right?
Yeah.
I think to start to look to reframe what you're doing, or maybe even pivot on the specifics of what you're writing about and how you're marketing, could have a huge impact in your business. So for you, Philip, as an example, rather than focusing so much on blockchain, it's you could just as easily talk about blockchain in the context of how is this, what are the other cycles you could liken this to, and how will that affect the developers that will experience a change in the demand for their work.
Right.
Because that can be applied to any technology in the future.
Yep. And that's essentially what I'm going to do. I'm going to leverage some assets, if you will, where my heart was in it, and still do an experiment that's basically the same bottom line, but just approached differently. And now with the advantage of, like, I actually care about this stuff, and I care so much that, I mean, one of the things I don't think we necessarily talked about that occurs to me now is that when you care deeply, the work is just more joyful. And the work in marketing at the outset might be very significant. It's a lot of work, in other words. Wouldn't you rather enjoy that work rather than feel like it's a slog? I think that's half the reason that folks kind of resist doing marketing is it is a lot of work. Doing it right is maybe even more work than doing it badly. And they just haven't found an area where they can feel enthusiastic because of the subject matter is not all that interesting to them. Well, that's a problem that's going to haunt you your whole career, or the length of, I don't really think so much in terms of marketing campaigns, but it's going to haunt you for as long as you live with that mismatch between your head and your heart.
Yeah, indeed. So if a person has the mismatch now, what would your advice be to them?
Well, I talked about first principles earlier. I think there's a variation of that, which is like kind of self-discovery or looking inside. What do you care about it? So there's the purely backwards looking version of that, which is just like, look at every aspect of your life. What gets you excited? And there are people who tell me stuff, like have told me verbatim, that they cannot find anything outside of their family that has that for them. That feeling of like there's a spark there that could be kind of nurtured into a flame of enthusiasm. I have wrestled with that myself, and I really feel like the answer is, well, you might be a good candidate for a job, or like, I can't help you because I don't know what to tell you. If that's the honest truth, after deep reflection, there's like nothing that you care about outside of your own family. That's great. Nothing wrong with that, but I just don't think you have what it takes to do your own marketing. So maybe find a situation where you don't have to do that. I think that's the most truthful, objective answer to that. But I want to hold out the hope that, well, maybe you just need to look a little deeper, or maybe you just are not looking at things the right way. But I think maybe that's doing those folks a disservice. I wouldn't hazard a guess as to what percentage of self-employed people are in that situation. If there is a spark of like, well, gosh, I just can't see how I could make it into a business, but I really enjoy tennis. And I just like, I could play tennis all day long if I had the time. And I could read about it all day long, or I could talk to people about it. That's the kind of spark I'm talking about. You may not see anything that looks like a viable path between where you are now and work that recruits the energy of that passion, but I still think you should give it a chance and trust that that spark is going to take you someplace good. There's a lot of unknowns about how you might get there. It's risky, but I feel like that is the more reliable long-term path than almost anything else. Certainly more reliable than faking it.
I think that's a great place to leave it.
All right. And it scares me to say that. I can't leave this topic without saying that, because I feel like I'm asking people to be idealists rather than pragmatists. And maybe I am, but that's just kind of how I see it.
Here's the way I would summarize it. If you are someone who is wired to feel unmotivated if you don't truly care about what you're doing, then you need to find a way to do things that you care about. And if you're someone who can work through it and just show up and do the job, that's totally fine too. This advice maybe is not as applicable to you, and you might be able to work through it. But if you found this to be an issue, then you're probably in the first camp.
And I guess the good news is I feel like the world that is becoming is one that has room for people who have some kind of crazy enthusiasm about some niche thing and want to make a business around it. I think the opportunity is actually there more than it ever has been to do that. So that makes me feel a little better about giving that advice. If this was the 1950s and I was giving that advice, I think I'd be giving people career suicide level advice. This is not the 1950s.
No, it is not, my friend.
Well, that's a good place to leave things. Listen, I hope you have a wonderful week.
Same to you, my friend.
Bye.